Welcome to the TWIML AI Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Charrington. Hey, what's up, everyone? We are just 1 week away from kicking off TWIML Fest, and I am super excited to share a rundown of what we've got in store for week one. On deck are the Codenames Bot Competition Kickoff, an Accessibility and Computer Vision Panel, the first of our Wellness Wednesdays sessions featuring meditation and yoga, as well as the first block of our unconference sessions proposed and delivered by folks like you. The leaderboard currently includes sessions on sampling versus profiling for data logging, deep learning for time series in industry, and machine learning for sustainable agriculture. You can check out and vote on the current proposals or submit your own by visiting twimlai.com/twimlfest/vote. And of course, we'll have a couple of amazing keynote interviews for you, which we'll be unveiling shortly. As if great content isn't reason enough to get registered for TWIML Fest, by popular demand, we are extending our TWIML Fest swag bag giveaway by just a few more days. Everyone who registers for TWIML Fest between now and Wednesday, October 7th, will be automatically entered into a drawing for one of five TWIML Fest swag bags, including a mug, t-shirt, and stickers. Of course, registration and all the action takes place at twimlfest.com, so if you have not registered yet, be sure to jump over and do it now. We'll wait here for you. Before we jump into the interview, I'd like to take a moment to thank Microsoft for their support of the show and their sponsorship of this series of episodes highlighting just a few of the fundamental innovations behind Azure Cognitive Services. Cognitive Services is a portfolio of domain-specific capabilities that brings AI within the reach of every developer without requiring machine learning expertise. All it takes is an API call to embed the ability to see, hear, speak, search, understand, and accelerate decision-making into your apps. Visit aka.ms/cognitive to learn how customers like Volkswagen, Uber, and the BBC have used Azure Cognitive Services to embed services like real-time translation, facial recognition, and natural language understanding to create robust and intelligent user experiences in their apps. While you're there, you can take advantage of the $200 credit to start building your own intelligent applications when you open an Azure free account. That link again is aka.ms/cognitive. And now, on to the show. All right, everyone. I am here with Cha Zhang. Cha is a partner engineering manager with Microsoft Cloud and AI. Cha, welcome to the TWIML AI podcast.
Thank you, Sam. Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you as well. Before we dive in, I'd love to learn a little bit about your background. Tell us how you came to work in computer vision.
Sure. I actually have been at Microsoft for 16 years. I joined Microsoft originally as a researcher at Microsoft Research. I was there for 12 years. My research was primarily applying machine learning to image, audio, video, all these different applications. Started 2016, I joined on the product side, and currently I'm working as an engineering manager, and my primary focus is on OCR and document understanding.
Awesome. So we will be focusing quite a bit on OCR and some of your work in that space. And, you know, I think people often think of OCR as a solved problem, right? It's, you know, we've been scanning documents and extracting text out of those documents for a long time. Obviously, the advent of deep learning, changes things, but I'd love to get the conversation started by having you share a little bit about, what's new and interesting in the space. How has it changed over the past few years?
Sure. Actually, it wasn't very long ago when people talk about OCR, what comes out the mind was firstly scan documents. In many people's eyes, OCR for scan documents is sort of a solved problem. more lately, I think there's two major developments. One is with a mobile first kind of world where everybody now have mobile phones and they take pictures everywhere. So there's a lot of demand to do text recognition out of images in the wild. And that certainly is a much more challenging problem than scan documents. And then technically, because of the advance in deep learning, we have realized that with deep learning, we can do OCR at a different level. We can make it a lot more accurate than before, and we can solve OCR problem in the kind of image in the wild scenario. And so I think it started in early 2010-ish. I think there's a lot of big advances in this area. And now we're seeing basically OCR becomes something really works. You know, people just don't need to worry about quality, et cetera. It just mostly works.
Can you talk a little bit more about the challenges that arise when you're trying to do OCR in the wild?
Of course. I think for documents, usually it's white background and black text. But for images in the wild, essentially it's a photo. So in the photo, there's a lot of variations in the text. First, there's a huge scale variation. So some text, if you capture a picture of a street, there might be some store name that are super big, and then there are some tiny text that's hard to see. So there's a big variation in scale of the text. And the aspect ratio of this text can be really long, because text string can be very long compared to regular objects like a cat or a dog. And because of the mobile capture scenario, usually it's difficult to enclose these texts by an axis-aligned rectangles. For example, there might be perspective distortions of the text when the camera sees them. The background in the image in the wild is much more complicated than the typical white background you see in scan documents. And some of these backgrounds, such as fences, breaks and stripes, even though they appear quite simple for human beings, but think of like fences can be a perfect bunch of ones, on the street sitting there, and they look very similar to characters. And so those create additional challenges. And I think one of the biggest one, I think technically for OCR that's challenging is the localization accuracy. And so typically in object detection, the localization accuracy, if it's measured by intersection of a union, and if that criterion is bigger than 0.5, people think this is good enough. For OCR, if you actually, the intersection is only half of the union, a lot of the characters will be missing. So usually OCR will need a 0.9, 0.95 level kind of accuracy in order to recognize all the characters properly. So
can you explain that in more detail? What is intersection over union and how is that used in object detection?
Yeah, so in order to measure the accuracy of a particular detection algorithm, you need to ground truth label the data. And so typically what people do is they create a bounding box of the object to be detected. And then you use a automatic algorithm to figure out where the object is. And that will also create a bounding box. Now you have two bounding boxes. And the question is, how do you measure how well these two boxes align? And a common measure is to take the intersection of these two bounding boxes, and you take the union of these two bounding boxes, and you get two areas. And you can imagine if the two bounding boxes are very close to each other, overlapping a lot, then that intersection of a union would be very high. But if they are off, they're offset by quite a bit, then, that number is low. So that's kind of an academia standard, how people measure detection accuracy with this criteria.
Got it. And so you were saying that the threshold that you need in the case of text is higher because of what?
because let's just think about, you know, you have a ground truth text, let's say hello world, and it's elongated a rectangle, and you say I have a text detection algorithm that creates also a bounding box, but have a intersection of a union, let's say roughly 0.5. And so what that means is that the intersection area divided by the union of the two bounding box is 50%. Mm-hmm. So very likely the detected bounding box will miss a few characters because, you know, the overlapping is not there. And so you might be missing an H, you might be missing a D at the end. And all this will cause the OCR to produce wrong results. And so that's the main challenge here.
So in the case of a traditional object detection scenario, you know, you may miss a half of the face, but you can tell that there's a face there.
In the case
of OCR, you're just missing letters and it makes it a lot more difficult for the algorithm to guess what was there.
That's exactly.
Got it. And maybe taking a step back just to the problem as a whole, granted mobile is driving, you know, this transition to these in the wild pictures and people trying to OCR them. But what are the high value use cases there? Like, is it, you know, I'm thinking of some interesting ones as like the, when it's in conjunction with translation, you know, maybe I'm in another country and I've done this. Yes. You know, you take pictures of words in another character to try to read the menu or something like that. And I've also done things like scan documents on a phone and you might want to OCR those, but that's kind of back to the traditional OCR problem in a lot of ways. What are some of the other use cases that are common?
Yeah, so if you look at the kind of business opportunities, I still think the traditional document, you know, scan document, I think some traditional kind of OCR problems are like, for example, receipts, where people can scan in the old days, but nowadays people mostly do reimbursement by snapping a photo. So I think in terms of the market, the revenue, I think that's still quite a big one. There are a few others. The one that you mentioned, if you have a phone, you go to a foreign country, you snap a photo and you want to translate, and that's one. There's also a lot of applications in digital asset management. And so this is when you either you are a big company or you are a personal kind of, you have some big storage of photos and where you want to organize these photos. We have shown that with OCR capability, you can increase the accuracy of processing these photos and retrieve these photos. As a matter of fact, you know, the big search engines like Google and Bing, when they search images, OCR is an integral part of that as well, because the OCR, the content can help a lot in getting the best images.
Okay. And so you were mentioning kind of some of the technical challenges and localization of the text in these images is one of those challenges. How do you go about it? Is it the case that, you know, deep learning is, you know, so powerful, off the shelf deep learning techniques just solves it for you? Or do you, you know, are you re-engineering the whole pipeline? How do you approach that?
Yeah. So in text detection, usually the detection pipeline is different from a traditional object detection. What's been most popular for kind of OCR for image in the wild today is something called anchor-free detection.
Anchor-free.
Typical object detection, usually the most well-known algorithms like FastRCN and FastRCN, etc., they basically create these anchors and then they regress the actual bounding box of the object. The challenge of using that kind of approach is that these anchors need to be preset. And so typically for normal object detection, you set at a certain density and then you set a certain set of aspect ratios. Like your anchor box are 1 to 2, 1 to 3, 1 to 1. Typically you go about there. But some of the tech can go like 20 to 1. So really, you cannot, it will be a huge computational cost to go with anchor-based approach. And so modern days for OCR, we go anchor-free. And the high-level concept is essentially by using convolutional neural networks, you almost do kind of a per-pixel level decision or classification saying, well, this region nearby this particular pixel looks like part of text. And so there is a text, non-text classification, almost kind of per pixel level. And then you rely on a few algorithms to group these into text lines by looking at how well two text region are similar to each other. And you can decide, well, these two looks like the same texture, same color. Maybe they should be connected. And in this regard, there are quite a few well-known algorithms to do this connection. Earlier days, people use a relatively kind of rule-based approach like SegLink, where they link based on some features, but it's kind of rule-based. More recently, people start looking to new networks like relation network. So they're kind of estimating the relation of two regions of features, and based on that to decide, well, these two should be connected or not. And so that way, you started kind of bottom up. You start with a per pixel kind of classification, and then you do grouping, and you come out with text lines. Very powerful approach. It can not only detect kind of straight lines, but even curved lines. You can handle them pretty well with those approaches.
And so it sounds like you're describing a pipeline that's not like a end-to-end trained single neural network that you give it images and train it on labeled data and it is telling you what the text is, but rather a bunch of independent steps.
Yes, that's a very good observation. Actually, so for OCR, detection is only the first step. And after detection, we typically run a character model where you take the detected text lines, you normalize them into a straight line with a fixed height, and then you run a character model to actually decode the image into a character, a list of characters. And there are a lot of the approach actually similar to speech, where, you know, speech is going from acoustic signal to these texts. But here we're going from image to text. But a lot of the approaches that we use, like LSTM, language modeling, these are very similar. Now, your question is certainly valid because in speech today, you know, people do end-to-end training. You start from audio signal, you directly go to text. For OCR, we are not there yet. I think the main challenge is, well, first is like how much data you have. I think speech, you can collect a lot more data compared with OCR. OCR data are usually very expensive to collect and label. And so going stage by stage at this point is more economically doable than, you know, do end-to-end training.
And why is that? It seems like we have tons of, you know, pictures with words in them that we, you know, that we know. Particularly, is it just of the in the wild examples where we don't have the labeled data, or is it also this document use cases? Because I'm imagining Microsoft has probably, you know, labeled a ton of receipts and business cards and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think certainly labeling is very, very expensive. And for Microsoft, we are a company paying a lot of attention to privacy, you know, those kind of issues. And the collecting OCR data has been the major, I would say, a blocking issue to go for this kind of end-to-end approach. Because if you think about it, a lot of the document that we actually care, like if you say, talk about invoice, talk about receipts, business card, they all contain PII information. And those are data extremely difficult to obtain. And we follow very strict kind of guidelines, how we can collect them, how we can label them. So in some way, we're limited by these privacy restrictions, but we do respect those a lot. And so we, as a result, you know, we are now going end-to-end at this point.
Got it. Makes me think a little bit about the
some of the issues with neural networks remembering data. So for example, there are examples where you train a CNN and there are some attacks that you can do that will reproduce some of the images, you know, to some degree or another that the model was trained on. Likewise, with these very large language models, you can start to see some of the text that the models were trained on come out in the output. I would imagine if you were training end to end, at least, then that becomes an issue as well. And maybe, you know, more so than in the case of images. What's your intuition there? Would it be worse or better than images?
I would imagine it will be similar, I would say. So after all, you know, OCR, you come from image to text, but during the learning of this OCR process, language model is actually very helpful to help improve the OCR accuracy. And so, for example, during decoding of these text lines into text, we use some of the like LSTM or, you know, basically these very popular language modeling schemes. And certainly it remembers the contextual information of the language in order to help the OCR to recognize these texts properly. And so I think when you go to end to end, when the amount of data that you use for training is humongous, I think you know it's difficult to imagine for me. You know, we'll have similar level of data for training like BERT models or you know those GPT models. Those are huge amount of data, but still you will learn something from the text, and they might leak into the model as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, what enabled BERT and many of the recent innovations around language models is a shift from supervised to the semi-supervised way of framing the task. Is there a semi-supervised framing for the OCR task that makes sense?
Actually, for OCR today, we are not, although I think it's definitely a very interesting research problem. I think BERT is a super nice framework for transfer learning. You know, you go from pre-trained model and then, you know, unsupervised, and then you can. In the image world, I think transfer learning probably exists earlier in image than language. So earlier days when we have ImageNet, we train like ResNet, those are already being used by for transfer learning. So unsupervised kind of image learning is also, I think it's still ongoing. There's a lot of interesting projects going on. Yeah, I think for OCR right now, we're not there yet. I guess one of the main issues for building a product like OCR to use some of these pre-trained model is the computational cost. And I think this happens in language as well. BERT model, the GPT model 3, like is, you know, multi-billions of, you know, parameters. It's very difficult to turn them into a product. For OCR, it's also, you know, we have the same problem. Computational cost is very sensitive. We need to make it fast. And so we're using relatively small models. And normally we train from scratch. Transfer learning does show some benefit, but when the data reaches a certain amount, we found training from scratch is perfectly fine. Yeah.
Meaning when you have a certain amount of data to train from, then...
Yeah. In the very early days when we started doing deep learning on OCR, we actually rely a lot on on distillation. That's teacher-student learning, where we first train a big model and then we gradually use teacher-student learning to create a small model so that it can run efficiently. Nowadays, we have figured out that, you know, you can train these small models from scratch. The amount of data that we have on the order of, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions of images, sufficient to train from scratch on some model and reach about the same accuracy.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Are you saying that you need more data to train smaller models?
No, I'm saying that, so take BERT as an example. BERT is super beneficial for learning because it has seen so many documents. So giving any new language task, presumably your data is not much. There's not much data that you have to train this new task. And therefore, leveraging BERT, where it has seen so many documents, will help through transfer learning to transfer some of the knowledge that the BERT has learned from this huge set of documents to the small kind of task. And so that it can reduce the amount of documents required to train the smaller task. The same thing happens in ImageNet transfer learning, where, you know, if it's a ResNet trained on ImageNet, you learn a lot of visual information from the ImageNet data set. Then if you have a tiny detection task, like detecting a helmet, let's say, and you can do the transfer learning and you can use a very small amount of data set to actually train a very good helmet detector. What I was saying just now was that for the problem of OCR, where, you know, it is certainly a very important computer vision problem, and you know, every company who invests in OCR tend to collect quite a bit of data, not to the level of, you know, billions, but, you know, hundreds of thousands, like millions. To that level, that amount of data is sufficient that you do not need to go transfer learning. You can train the model from scratch and you get very good result.
Got it. And so when you were using transfer learning, were you using models based on ImageNet, you know, along the lines of ResNets and others, or were there? Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Let's see. So the smaller models that you're training, are they, you know, some of the traditional architectures that we've already, you know, brought up, or are you building out new architectures for the models themselves for this specific problem?
Right now, we're using some of the traditional models. There are some active research going on regarding searching the best effective architecture for OCR. We haven't seen convincing results yet, but I think that's a very active research area that we're still kind of looking into, particularly when we're trying to make it smaller and smaller, you know, faster and faster. Yeah.
And when you say searching the best architecture for OCR, are you using the word searching generally? Like you have researchers are looking at different models and trying to find the best one for OCR. Or are you suggesting a domain specific neural architecture search kind of?
I mean, neural architecture search.
Okay.
So that certainly can be applied to OCR. And we're still exploring it, but I think it's a very promising direction.
Okay. Interesting. Earlier in the conversation, you talked about one of the big use cases is some of this semi-structured data that we want to extract information out of. Invoices is one example. There was a recent demonstration, or I guess it's actually product now, of the mobile version of Excel or something. You can take a picture of a grid-like data, and that will, you know, both extract the text and organize it into a spreadsheet. Yes. You know, talk a little bit about the product that you're working on, the form recognizer, which is doing something similar.
Yeah, of course. So OCR certainly is pretty low level, and it's, you know, other than some of the application I mentioned earlier, like digital asset management, photo management, you know, translation, you can directly use OCR. But for many customers, what they want is not just OCR. They want to extract information from documents. Think about, you know, I need to process millions of invoices. I want to extract vendor name, you know, due date, total amount. Or if it's an MS expense system where you want to process all the receipts, and you know, either it can be a verification purpose, for example, like, okay, how do I make sure employees are not putting random numbers and they don't match with the receipt that's actually filed? It sounds kind of silly, but you know, today a lot of the company do this verification manually. Because of the huge manual amount of effort needed, they often can only do sampling. So you sample like 5% of these receipts to validate. But you kind of miss a huge chunk that you never even look at it. So we are looking at this space and we're trying to build essentially two categories of product. One is a pre-built set of product. And so these are solutions that works out of the box. For example, it can be a pre-built receipt, pre-built business card, pre-built invoice. So these are you're sending a image or PDF file. It will extract all the fields that you'll be interested in. Another big category that we think are super important is customization, because you know the pre-built may never fit every need. So we have a solution called the custom form where we allow customer to basically send us a few sample images. You can either label or even, you know, not doing any labeling, but we will be able to extract key value pairs out of these documents. Again, we see this as a much closer to what the customers need, and that's what Form Recognizer's position as.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about a bunch of the interesting technical challenges at the lower level at OCR. Does the form level, you know, is that a kind of a packaging of OCR, or does it have its own technical challenges to overcome?
Actually, it has a lot of very interesting challenges. One of the work recently is coming out from Microsoft Research was, you know, targeting exactly this problem. And so just think about it, the language, passing these invoices and receipts are essentially sort of a language problem because, you know, you have this text there. The challenge here is that these are images, so you run OCR on them, but unlike a typical language data set where you scratch from the internet, you know, Wikipedia, this, you know, you basically have this ordering of these words already, but if these data are coming from image, essentially you can detect these text lines, but it's actually very difficult to define the read order of these text lines. And ordering of these text lines by itself is a very challenging problem when you have images in the wild. Paper can be curved, you know, can be crunched, can be rotated, perspective, you know, all kind of issues. It can has background text, you know, all this. And so the particular approach that MSRA came out is called Layout LM. It's actually a modified BERT model. It's also a language model. But in addition to the language, we also embed 2D information, like what is the XY position of the bounding box of the text. With that information train. Actually, this is all can also be trained without supervision. It's an unsupervised pre-training. We're able to learn this kind of spatial relationship in these invoices without coming out with explicit read order. With that, we actually can do a lot of this key value extraction really well. And there's also quite a lot of advanced research looking into, say, relation networks, where you see two text lines nearby each other, you can predict the relationship. Again, this is similar to the OCR where you have these bottom pixel level classification. You want to group them here. You want to group key and value pairs. And there's also a lot of advanced research in these graphical convolution networks where you do convolution networks over a graph, where the graph is defined by connecting nearby text lines. Again, this is an approach without requiring read order, but just look at the spatial relationship. And so these are all actually very exciting kind of extension of language, but also using visual information to help passing these vertical data more accurately than
interesting
before.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I at a quick thought would have imagined that, you know, maybe the top part of the stack there is more rule based and the bottom part of the stack was, you know, more machine learning based, but it sounds like there are even, I don't know, you know, relatively, but there are a bunch of really interesting
Doing a lot of machine learning stuff on the top as well.
And I'm imagining the, you know, when you talk about relation that, for example, on an invoice, you could have date and then the date, you know, horizontally next to it, or you can have date and then the date beneath it. Yes. You may have an address box and then a bunch of text that comes beneath it. And it would be nice to know that, you know, we're talking about the address here. That's part of the idea of a structured text extraction. Mm-hmm. So in that, you mentioned RelationNet and graphical CNNs. Are those two approaches to solving the same problem, or are they solving different aspects of the problem?
They solve different aspects of the problem, and they can be also used to solve the same. I mean, like right now, the main focus for us, for example, are extracting key value pairs. And mm-hmm. this is both kind of pre-build and customization. Think about, you know, if it's an invoice and you want a vendor name. So it's a name, certainly, you know, the text information, because, you know, you see this is, it looks like a vendor name. This probably is a vendor name. You know, some invoice doesn't even have the key in the invoice. Right. Like, you don't even have the word vendor name there, right? So how do you figure out that this thing is still a vendor name? So there, you rely on information that's language, and that's also kind of the how the document is laid out. Like, okay, the font size may matter. You know, the position of this thing may matter. So we are looking into combining all these informations to come out with a better decision on those fields. Mm-hmm.
And so how does a graphical representation or way of thinking about the document get you to a solution to, you know, these kinds of problems? You know, for example, the unlabeled vendor name?
So the graphical kind of approach is basically, so you get a bunch of text lines detected by the OCR, and you connect these text lines with their neighbors. You define basically how strong these connections are. Actually, it's not defined. You actually learn these relationships by looking at the text, looking at their relative positions, like looking at their font similarity. One issue that you actually just mentioned was like addresses. You can actually have multiple lines of addresses. How do you know they actually belong to the same address, right? So there's this kind of, all these side information could be very helpful in determining that they should be grouped together. And in the convolutional kind of graphical model, you learn a convolutional network by computing from all the neighboring nodes, where each node is a text line, to aggregate basically at the center node. And so basically the model learns by not only looking at the current text line that's in focus, but also look at all the nearby text lines and decide, well, given all these contextual information, it does look like this is a vendor name. I guess that's a very high level conceptual description of why it would work. Mm-hmm. But it's a data driven machine learning. So the model learns, mm-hmm. learns those things. Yeah.
As you're solving problems like this, are you often needing to relabel your data set? For example, I'm imagining early on in developing an algorithm like this, you have a bunch of invoices and you draw a bounding box around the addresses and you say, this is the address. Mm-hmm. But then you say, oh, well, the font information, you know, is a whole new data set, you know, so then you have to label, well, this is, you know, are you going in and having people label Helvetica versus Arial? That seems a bit fine-grained and hard to actually get experts to label, or is it more abstract than that?
We usually only label the end goal, which is the fields that you're going to extract. So for example, you want to extract vendor name, vendor address, total tags, you know, these, you basically draw a bounding box in those regions and use that as a ground truth data.
Got it. We're going to the same place. When you say font.
When I say font, actually, it's in some way implicit, in the sense that we're taking these bounding boxes, we're extracting image information, right? So think of it as, let's say, run a convolution network to extract a feature of that part of the text region, a text line. So this feature is essentially all the visual information that can be helpful in deciding or determining the relationship between text lines. And so if features are similar, that probably means they are similar font, they are similar size, you know, so those kind of, I think that seems to be efficient, sufficient to handle this.
So you're not trying to kind of featureize your underlying images into these distinct things. What I inferred when you said font, but do you look at the, you know, is there an analogy to kind of looking at the layers of the network? And, you know, when we do this with CNNs, you see like textures and things like that. Is there some analogy that you've seen in looking at the layers of, you know, the network that says, oh, this layer is like, you know, identifying fonts?
No, we haven't been going there yet. Okay. I guess it's certainly interesting to look at it. My take is most likely, you know, font is just one attribute. I believe there are many other things. I think it'll be interesting to look at these features visually.
We've talked throughout the discussion about kind of the ways that OCR and this form recognition problem kind of blends the vision domain and NLP domain, and you know, language models has come up quite a bit. Is there a little bit more kind of depth we can go into there? Some of the ways that you see NLP and in particular the advances in NLP over the past few years kind of influencing the problem and the way you solve it?
We certainly see NLP plays a very important role in these verticals. After all, these invoice, receipt, business card, you know, these are all human artifacts. They are kind of language artifacts in some way, right? So all the kind of latest state of the art in language modeling, we definitely want to leverage them. The thing I mentioned earlier, like the layout or it's one way to leverage them by using the language model, but also embed additional visual information, hopefully to solve these problems effectively. Because its input is really different, right? You know, the BERT is like you take text as input. Here we're taking a bunch of text lines with their 2D locations and bounding boxes as inputs, and the algorithm can naturally kind of solve these problems.
And is it also trying to do the traditional language model predicting the next character or word or you know, set of text?
Yeah, the way we train them are very similar. Basically, you know, mask text, but you mask some words and trying to predict. That's certainly you can use a lot of others. I think, you know, like I know recently people use translation targets. You can use auto variation encoder kind of targets. And, you know, this is a really active research area at this point. I think we're still just scratching the surface, although we're already seeing very, very promising results. And so we definitely want to look deeper into this and see how well this really can push the state of the art.
Kind of continuing on that thread of the active research areas and what the future holds in this area, you know, what are you most excited about in this domain of, you know, OCR and in general extracting text from documents, vertical applications and the like?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have been working on this problem for quite a while, but I think there's still a lot of interesting problems. Only when we start to work with customers, we realize, you know, there are problems we haven't been able to solve. I can just name one, for example, like table extraction. It sounds trivial, but when you actually look at all the existing tables in the world, you know, the simplest one are those with explicit cell borders where you have straight lines. But in reality, these tables can have no cell boundaries at all. It can be mixed on top with stamps, you know, all these things that are kind of making the problem extremely hard. And so that's just, you know, another one that is extremely challenging, but we want to solve. Another thing that I sort of briefly mentioned about earlier was the customization part of this vertical. How do you customize to customers' own data instead of, you know, having these pre-built? Because inevitably you will have data that doesn't work with these pre-built models. And how do you allow customer to have a way to build their own models to still work? And that by itself is a very challenging problem, because, you know, asking customers to label a lot of data is painful. They don't want to go there. And so either we go unsupervised or we go with a very, very limited number of supervision data. And in such a case, how do we adapt our model so that it can work on this document that customer realize that the pre-built model has failed? That's also very interesting kind of research problem that we were looking into. It's like, it's, you know, in vision, in language, there's this low shot learning. It's also, you know, now it's definitely applicable to the problem here as well.
Mm-hmm. In the case of some of the productized vision offerings, Azure does this as well. The user is able to upload, you know, its own set of labeled data, and kind of the results for object detection are kind of fine-tuned against the user's data set.
Yeah.
Do the OCR and form recognition offerings, are they providing something similar? Can you upload? Can I upload my own invoices, and you're doing some kind of transfer learning? If you are, what are you doing to take advantage of what the user is providing?
So we do have a product called Custom Form, which allow customer to upload a few samples. Here we usually say minimum 5 samples. So. Mm-hmm. Say you have an invoice that doesn't work with existing models, and so you want to solve the problem. You upload 5 invoices with similar, it's kind of either from the same vendor or kind of looks or similar in structure, and we can figure out these key value pairs and extract them either unsupervisedly or supervisedly, right? So unsupervised means customer don't need to label anything. So you upload 5 documents. The information we're gaining by looking at these 5 documents is, well, these documents are supposed to be similar, and therefore there are going to be a bunch of words in this document that actually is common across these documents. So this commonality help us to tell, well, this is probably part of the empty form or the template of the form, while the thing that's varying across forms are like, must be information customer has filled in as kind of different from sample to sample. And so with that information, we can actually extract key value pairs out of, without any supervision. All you need is upload 5 similar documents. Of course, that works to a certain degree, but if you're still not happy with accuracy, we provide a way for you to label your key value pairs. And so here is like we have a UX where you can go and label the fields you care by essentially highlight the OCR text lines where, you know, you think this is a value I want to extract. And then we actually learn a model out of 5 samples and produce a model that can be used by the customer to extract these values. The accuracy is actually normally pretty high, in the 90-95% range, actually. So,
and so when the customer does this, is this process entirely learned, or is there a human in the loop kind of exception handling element to it?
So I guess this is take a step back. I think all the products, OCR products today, you know, OCR has made a significant advance, but if you actually care about the numbers, think about invoice, right? If your total is wrong, you know, it's really bad.
Very bad.
So what we recommend is definitely we recommend people to have a agent backup. For all the products we offer,
we give people
confidence, right? Okay. So how confident we are about the extraction of a particular value. Different customer can choose their own threshold and have an agent to look at them. But I think at today's accuracy, we don't recommend kind of straight through unless you are handling certain specific applications. I can give you an example. For example, if you're verifying receipt image against a employee entered data. So there you can go automatic, right? Because if the OCR produces a different number than the employee, well, you will need somebody to look at them anyway. But right. if they actually match, then well, that probably means it's okay.
So right.
certain application you can automatic more.
Got it. And so in the question that I was asking is slightly different though. When so say you've got someone using automated form recognition and they have their five examples that they mm-hmm. haven't been happy with, and they submit mm-hmm. that in through, some website or mm-hmm. API. Is someone at Microsoft taking those and, taking them manually through some process to try to figure out why they're not working, or are they thrown into some training job and then the customer's result gets better?
Okay. No, we don't look at customers' data. So this is a fully automated product, meaning, mm-hmm. Customer basically label these files. They call a API to train a model. The whole process is automated.
And so under the covers, are they kind of forking off their own model and the, last few layers are getting cut off and it's fine tuning, or is it more elaborate than that, or...
It's more elaborative than that. Underneath the hood, there are multiple steps. We leverage a lot of information in these sample documents. For example, as I mentioned earlier, there will be words common across these samples, and those are very strong indicators regarding, this might be part of the empty part of the form where, you probably think these are not so interesting to the customer. Transfer learning is, it's certainly one way of doing that. Right now we are actually training these models without transfer learning. So it's actually the model is trained from scratch for every very few customers. We're able to do this. Because some very interesting work that we have done to basically augment this data to make sure that you have sufficient data to still be able to train a model out of, five samples only. And so there can be a feedback loop as well. So, if a customer is not happy with a model trained by five samples, you can upload more and mm-hmm. we just train a new model for you. So every time you retrain, you just get a new model. That way, it's a feedback loop where a customer can keep improving their model until to a certain stage where it's really performing for the customer.
And so when you say augmenting the five that they're providing, are we talking about data augmentation in the sense of a transformation pipeline that kind of changes, adds noise, rotates, that kind of thing? Or are we talking about you've got some other data set that you're adding to their five and training it on that aggregate data set, and that's how you're producing a better model?
Both, although I think the latter one is more actually when customer label these data, we ask them to provide some additional information. For example, if they label this as a date, we know it's a date. And so in this way, we can artificially create more data to fill the form so that we can produce more data to train the model. Also, we use a very robust machine learning algorithms that are robust to very few examples. And so that way we can learn with this limitation. Mm-hmm. Normally, if you look at many of the other offerings that people provide, you have to train with hundreds of examples. Here, we're pushing it really down to five, and we hope to push even lower in the future.
Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that this is a stacked problem and you've got, some low level OCR, for example, models that are trained with many, many documents. And what you're doing with this form recognizer custom data is more at the top end of that stack. Is the off the shelf model that I'm using without the five example customization, is that also trained on relatively few examples?
What do you mean?
I guess maybe I'll jump ahead to the conclusion that I'm drawing on what's confusing me is how are you getting better results with few examples if you're not using any kind of transfer? I guess I heard in your explanation that you're not using any kind of transfer.
So right now, the custom form support training model, and these models are usually, each model is geared towards one particular form type. And so in some way, you can think this problem is actually restricted. It's actually a easier problem. It's not like a pre-built invoice where essentially you want to handle all invoices. Here we are handling one particular invoice coming from, I would say, one particular vendor, let's say.
Right.
So they usually use a template. You know, it's like,
got it. And so the customer then, do they call a unique API to resolve invoices of this type, or is that then ensembled and then there's something that decides whether it's of the type that you've built the new model for?
Yeah, so here's a kind of the recommendation that we give to customers, right? So you maybe start with the pre-built model, and the pre-built model may work, and then your job is done. You know, you're happy, you go. And then you certainly, let's say you have a lot of invoices, and out of 1,000, 10 of them doesn't work. And so what we offer the customers, well, you can take these invoices and you can train specific models for these 10 different invoices.
Yeah.
You might need to train more than one model, this special model, because these invoices may look very, very different. So imagine you can train like 10 different custom models for this.
Yep.
We actually also offer kind of automatic invoice classification. So a API called Model Compose, where we can compose these 10 small models into one. And so all you need is just call into that one. And by calling into that one, we also provide you a confidence to say, well, because, you know, during testing, the customer send the invoicing, we don't really know whether it's one that doesn't work with this pre-built one, or whether it's part of this, it works well with a pre-built. So you send this invoice first to the customized version of the model, and we will tell you, hey, it doesn't look like any of the 10 you have trained. And so in this case, you will revert back and say, okay, now I'm calling the pre-built invoice, because you sort of know that pre-built actually works well for that. So that's what we recommend customers to do today.
I dug into a little bit of the detail there, but it's interesting to see kind of how the end-to-end problem is put together. And, you know, in a case like this, the ends of that problem are, you know, on the customer side, not just the service that you're offering. And so seeing how the pieces are put together is kind of interesting. Awesome. Well, Chad, thanks so much for taking the time and walking us through, you know, some of the interesting things that are happening in these domains.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you.
All right, everyone, that's our show for today. To learn more about today's guest or the topics mentioned in this interview, visit twimmelai.com. Of course, if you like what you hear on the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review the show on your favorite podcatcher. Thanks so much for listening, and catch you next time.